The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning if you're just after tuning in. There's a few things that I want to mention. Firstly, the Donegal Down Syndrome Association are having a cars and coffee at Carrigart Parochial Hall Sunday the 15th of October, this coming Sunday. It's from 12 noon to 2 p.m. Donations welcome at the door. Tickets will be on sale for a raffle, so if you can support that, maybe if you're on your way up to watch Downings in the intermediate final, you can call in there at the Parochial Hall in Carrigart for cars and coffee between 12 noon and 2 p.m. this coming Sunday. Cancer Care West, the West of Ireland Cancer Charity, there's a breast cancer awareness 5K, 3K run and walk. It's for all ages. It's a pink run and walk. It's at 10:30 a.m. on Sunday. It's €80 per adult. Children are free. It starts at Letterkenny Community Centre. Registration's being taken from 9 a.m. on the day. All funds raised in aid of Cancer Care West. So if you want to run or walk, either 5 or 3K, it's a pink run and walk. It's this coming Sunday, starting at Letterkenny Community Centre from 10:30 a.m. €8 per adult, children free, and all funds raised go to Cancer Care West, which regular listeners to this show will know is very, very important. Now, there is a... I'll actually get more details on that in a moment. It's another event coming up, but I just want to make sure I describe it correctly, so bear with me on that. Right, Greg, was it not announced a few months ago that the carer's allowance would be brought up to the living wage level? I'm a carer receiving €236 a week for 36 hours a week, which is approximately €650 an hour. We get 12 of a raise yesterday, €680 an hour. How are we supposed to get by on this, says Mary? I don't know, Mary. Neil Richmond, he said he was given out 38,000 work permits. There are these people. Where are these people going to live? You let him off the hook, Greg, when you have no control of a population growth. It's a disaster. Housing, health, etc. ain't going to work. But at the end of the day, that we're at full employment in this country and the businesses are struggling for workers. And this is a big problem in the UK at the moment because they've pulled up the drawbridge and they've no workers now coming in. All of the time, there have been people from outside of Ireland. This is nothing new. For as long as time has existed, people have come into this country to work. There's many jobs that need to be done that aren't filled at the moment. There are huge vacancies, and it's business that's calling for these permits to be issued so they can continue in business. I mean, you're already seeing certain businesses closing a couple of days a week because they simply don't have the staff to open. That's the purpose of these visas. Is that uncontrolled population growth? No, because it's visas. And I think you'll maybe associating that with refugees or international protection people. These are people coming here to work. It's a work visa. And where are they going to stay? I don't know. But who's going to build the houses? If we need more houses, who's going to build them? Maybe half of the people coming in on these work permits are going to be building these houses. So it's not that I let him off the hook. It's just that it's an internationally recognised situation where you give permits to people for certain jobs and they come in. And perhaps, as I say, they are the ones that are building the houses or they're the ones that are working in our nursing homes or hospitals. $12.70 per hour minimum bill age is very good. 15 would have been better. 15 years ago, I was getting 17 an hour. Tax and the other cuts out of it. It's no good. If a business can't pay their employees a better wage, then they should not be in business. How come Australia can pay a minimum of €16 per hour? The budget was shameful for those with disabilities. We need to disengage carers from social welfare across the board rises. Inflation for those with disabilities is far worse than others, and many use money to pay for private treatment or alternatives not offered by the HSE, even putting them in debt to do so. The buying, let me see, I just want to stay on the topic of the budget. Once again, people living in the Northwest do not benefit to the same extent. A lot of us will have children attending university in the North, encouraged by the government, but have no reduction in fees. I know it's a separate jurisdiction, but they could offer a refund. Another, why should taxpayers subsidise businesses? It is ridiculous, says a listener. The three electricity allowances should be means tested before many people that really need it could get more to help them. Exactly. And that was my question about targeted, universal decisions mean everyone, even if you're really well resourced, you get the money. Hi, Greg. €12 for pension should have been 200. Roll on elections till we get rid of this government. Tell that man to live on 230 a week. That's the widow's pension. It's just a joke. Thanks, Greg. The likely party in power after election are committing to €3 beyond the 12. So is that going to make a big difference? Tell that man I'm a widowed woman. I'm 64. I get no benefits. I get €220 a week. My daughter is home for a while as she's sick. She gets sick pay and then they cut my fuel allowance. How's that fair? It doesn't sound fair. Hi, Greg. The budget, not much good to myself and my wife when my mortgage is up 11 times last year. We're on the tracker mortgage and it's almost up €400 extra a month. Greg, this country's finished big time with the price of everything. There's a little thing on the mortgage there. Providing your mortgage is over 80 grand a year, you can get a rebate or a tax break, interest relief up until 1250, 1250. That's the maximum. I'm not sure if that's going to be of any use to you, but Greg, where are people getting the idea that the average industrial wage is 40,000? RTE were worse yesterday when they said 50,000. My wage is around €27,000 after tax, and that is me working a night shift. So I don't think I'll be getting much out of this budget. Maybe when I retire in a few years and get the state pension, I might get a little bit. Indeed, and I made that point as well. I hope you heard, because I do understand that. Is there anything towards students who are paying fees and accommodation in the north? Nothing that's obvious at this moment. The thing is though, sometimes, and I'm not saying it will be the case, there is more detail that is released that goes into things like that, but it's not announced on budget day. The government could fine €4 billion for Ukraine and €3 billion for climate change, but nothing for Letterkenny University Hospital, says a listener there. Right, all right, we're joined on the programme now by Sarah Shovlin, who is a member of the Banking Insurance Redress Focus Group. Good morning to you, Sarah. Thank you for your time today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Right. So have the banks confirmed that they are going to offer interest-free loans to defective block home owners, or have they just given strong indications that they might?
So there's been a positive step since we last spoke, and we must, however, approach with caution because it is early days. And as with all these things, the devil is in the detail. Mm-hmm. So the bank's narrative has changed, I would say, and this is welcome. I think they recognise that the scheme won't work without them. You know, you can't start to demolish and build a house with a fiver in your back pocket. So we need something and they need something. At the end of the day, many of these homes are still their assets. So the banks are certainly have a big part to play in this, for sure.
And would these sorry, Sarah, I beg your pardon, continue there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, they have changed their narrative. They do seem to be more sympathetic. We had a call out there a few weeks ago where we asked people to engage with their banks, and mm-hmm. if they suspect they have defective blocks, that they would contact their banks and let them know, because without the numbers, the banks are certainly not going to do anything. And some of the feedback we've had from people who have done that is that the lenders have treated them sympathetically, and, you know, we still encourage everyone to go out and to contact their banks, even if they only suspect they have mica. People generally have a very good idea, even if they don't have the testing done, as regards to the state of their home at this point in time.
And are we talking here at this point about pillar banks? Because obviously there are many caught up with vulture funds. They're already being shafted with high interest rates. Are they coming to the table at all in this regard? Now, I understand the majority will be with pillar banks, but I just want to recognise that maybe some might feel that this news isn't for them.
So we spoke to the BPFI last week. We've been working with them, as you know, since February. The initial proposal that we've seen still has to be approved by government. So they are saying that they recognise the homes can't be built without money. The government grant is only paid after a certain amount of work is done, and you can't start a home without any money. So they have recognised that, and they have said that they will lend. The good thing about this is that the pillar banks that you mentioned there, they are going to lend regardless if a person still has a mortgage on a house or not. Mm-hmm. Because if you are qualified on the scheme, it is my understanding that the details will be that you will qualify for this upfront money, upfront loan at 0%. And what is really important is the detail that hasn't come out yet is, you know, how long are you going to have that money? How soon will you have to pay it back? There is certainly talk about designing something that would be the payments that the government give you will be what pays back that 0% interim loan to the bank. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different to a normal loan, and the headline of a 0% loan isn't really maybe doing it justice. And mm-hmm. as I said, it's still my understanding this has to be approved by government. Nothing is signed off yet, but the initial indications are good.
So
what I would say, Greg, is...
Yep. I was just going to ask Sarah just to try and cover all bases while they're in my head, if you don't mind. There'll be a shortfall for some. So say, for instance, someone was going to be short after the grant €100,000. Would the bank offer that excess at 0%, or is it only what they can claw back from the government that might be offered at 0%? Because again, a lot of people might not be able to get their houses built for the available money from the government.
Yeah, correct. So this initial loan is something that is only something that they can claw back from the grant. So we have gone to the pillar banks, and I should say that we have included some of the non-lending banks out there as well as part of our negotiations and discussions. But we have gone to them and said that there's four products that are needed, and this is their response to one of the products that we've asked for. We have, of course, asked for 0% lending for the shortfall, so people who need more than the maximum grant to finish their home, that they be treated sympathetically from lending criteria and from a mortgage rate of 0%. But there is no indication yet as to what might come for those other products. Mm-hmm. We're very much talking about the first product out of the block is something where there is minimal risk, I would say, for the banks, and that they're going to claw it back from the scheme. It's like a short-term, mm-hmm. interim loan for the homeowner.
I mean, this would be fantastic if there were penalty-free downsizing, for an example. But again, and I'm not being negative, Sarah, and there's still an awful lot of work to do, but if we're being told that for the majority that this isn't a 100% scheme, redress scheme, well then for the majority, this first offering from the banks is not going to suit them if they can't borrow again from somebody else or dig into savings if they're lucky enough to have them.
Correct. And there's a much bigger issue, Greg, you know, here at play. So more worrying is the fact that the government and the banks have not clarified what the remediation certification means for the banks or indeed for the homeowner. So from early on, we as a group have focused on the damage default clause, which is in everyone's mortgage terms and conditions. And in simple terms, that means that, you know, the property is kept in good repair. Otherwise, the total debt becomes immediately payable. Mm-hmm. Other things that are in your terms and conditions are, you know, insurance. And when you go to renew your insurance, many times one of the questions is it of standard construction? How does somebody who has partially remediated their home answer that question for the insurance company? What work have the government done with the insurance companies to make sure that these homes that are partially remediated are able to be insured at a standard risk? So we all know that the insurance company might say, okay, they still have defective blocks, maybe it's a higher risk, therefore a higher premium. The defective block homeowners can't live their life forever in the trenches of, I still have defective blocks and this is what it means or doesn't mean as regards to my home being mortgageable or insurable.
Really, is that really not another argument as to why outer leaf and retaining the foundations is not really workable into the long term? Because I just don't see how those problems that you talk of there can be overcome, because it would take a completely different type of a mortgage product to stand over what would still be a defective building, because there still would be, and we don't know what the future holds for internal leaf or foundations for that matter. So really, until such time as we get to the point where it's inevitable, I feel that it's demolition and foundations out, we're going to be having the same conversations over and over.
There is certainly a big question there, and it becomes more apparent the further down this road we go. Mm. Those engaging with the scheme need to know in simple terms, you know, we have no written confirmation that homes will be mortgageable or resellable, or that you'll be able to switch your mortgage after you've remediated your home.
Mm-hmm. Or any indemnity passes through sale, for an example. So, for instance, the government did indemnify the worker on the outer leaf and the foundations. What does that do to the value of a property? And is that indemnity, if that's the right word, transferable?
All of those are great questions, you know, and there just hasn't been enough work done. Like, Dara O'Brien launched the biggest scheme in the world to remediate defective buildings. That's his own introductory statement from the launched scheme. Mm-hmm. So in his own words, he's done that, but he's done that in a silo. He hasn't engaged with the banks. He hasn't engaged with the insurance company. He hasn't engaged with, there's many others, scientists, you know, the list goes on. Mm-hmm. And we have a huge, huge scheme of 2.2 billion. And I'm sitting here at this point saying, well, what is it all for?
Yeah.
And if you can't have your home reinstated to a mortgageable condition, okay, I understand people want to, you know, the immediate focus has to be make the house safe, get out of your house and get back in. But longer term, the house is something that you have invested in and it's your biggest asset. And, you know, a simple thing from switching from one rate of 5% to a lower rate of 4% means that you need to have your house in a mortgageable condition. Mm-hmm. And if this scheme doesn't do that, what is it all for?
Yeah, and I think an interesting piece of information from the banks would be how they reflect a defective concrete home on their balance sheets for their shareholders, because that would give us a really good insight as to some of the questions you've just asked. Do they see it as worthless? Is it site only? Are they not actually even logging that? And by the way, the Banking Insurance Redress Focus Group and all the focus groups are doing amazing work. And to get the banks to the table and to get some movement in any area of this, I think is hugely significant, Sarah. And as we tease things out, that certainly shouldn't be lost in this, because, I mean, it's amazing progress when you think of where we were in the past. So I recognise that. In terms of...
I cannot thank Roisin Gallagher enough for setting up the redress focus groups. Without meeting like-minded people, none of this would happen, to your point. And, you know, I do encourage everyone out there to come forward. You'll have some expertise and, you know, volunteer and give some time. And meeting people of like-minded, you know, with like-minded goals, it does help you through this whole process as a homeowner.
Yeah, for sure. A couple in their 70s, the mortgage is paid, they're retired, they've got no means of taking out a loan or repaying anything for that matter. Has there been any opening conversations for people in that situation and any white smoke or positive signs, I wonder, Sarah?
This first product would also apply to them. So the interim funding at 0% would not be related to your mortgage or a bank that you have a relationship with. It would be based on that you have the report that your house is Mica and it needs a certain amount of remediation or demolished. And that will be the, as I understand it, the access to that 0% financing loan. But we are pushing hard on the other products. It's not going to be a quick fix here, you know. So we just really have to wait and see.
Okay, well, you'll keep us updated, of course, Sarah, and I think we're going to be talking about it separately. A new website that's been launched as well, too, focusing on all of this stuff. But for now, Sarah, thank you very much indeed. Sarah Shovlin, who is of the Banking Insurance Redress Focus Group, and as I say, any time you get the banks around the table and get some movement from them at all, it is a success. But it's still devil in the detail is a phrase that is associated with this crisis and will be for some time, no doubt. Paddy Bowner is going to be joining us shortly to reflect on the news that Ireland is going to be co-hosting a major tournament, Euro 2028. That's coming up shortly. Okay, so there was a lot going on yesterday, but we also learned that Ireland and Britain have been confirmed as Euro 2028 hosts yesterday in a €240 million estimated boost to the Irish economy. But it's also about a boost to the sport. Paddy Bowner is a former Republic of Ireland goalkeeper, and he joins us back on the show again. Great to see you, Paddy, and it's great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for coming on. Right, so this is a big boost, isn't it, for the country? I mean, we could never aspire, I don't think, to host one of these tournaments ourselves, certainly with our current infrastructure. So it makes perfect sense for us to team up with our nearest neighbours.
Yeah, listen, I think it's a good news story. Very, very positive about it. Delighted, actually. I love international football. That's the first thing to say. It brings a bit of passion, pride to your country. And I grew up I grew up sort of loving international sport, whether it was Olympics, whether it was rugby, whether it was football, and it just brings something special, inspires a nation. So from that perspective, brilliant. From a point of view of hosting it, I didn't think we would ever get to that point that we would be able to host something. Growing up, you're looking to afar. I remember Mexico was the first World Cup that I remember, far, far away in the distance, and we look at the big nations able to host these things. So going into partnership, I think, was the right thing to do. I don't think we would ever get to a point where we could do it on our own. So going into partnership, it allows that it is a brilliant tournament to come to our own shores. It's fantastic news.
Yeah, the idea of six games in the Aviva Stadium, and it's not just games. We're going to see the best players in Europe plying their trade as well. Four group matches, the last 16 tie in a quarterfinal, and Casement Park, obviously, work will be accelerated there to host a number of games as well. I mean, we can't forget that either. It's just going to be the buzz of the games, the excitement. You know, I mean, people can start talking about transport and getting people to and from and hotel prices. But look, it's about on the day, isn't it? And we managed to do it for Gareth Brooks. So I'm sure we'll manage to do it for Euro 2028. It's just going to be a great buzz across the country.
Yeah, and listen, it's going to be 40 years since we went to West Germany at the time, believe it or not. It's a long, long time ago. But I remember, Stuttgart. I remember playing against England. Remember all of those occasions and the fans and the Irish fans. It's brilliant for them because they've travelled the world. They've travelled Europe. It's cost them a lot of money. Now it's in their own doorstep. And that will be a real benefit to them also. And it is the buzz. And it's the legacy. You know, listen, there will be a financial legacy for it. It'll go back into football. It'll go back into the development of the game. I know there's issues around finance for everybody concerned in this moment and cost of living and so on and so forth. We understand that. So any money that we get, any money from that perspective, it's a real help. So I'm happy from that perspective. I think back to 88, and I think back to that time in Germany when probably we were going through a rough enough time ourselves, and suddenly we qualified, and the effect it had on our country, 88 going into 1990. And I think, people looking at it as maybe a bit of a milestone in the way that it positively affected our country. And that was in Germany, remember. Imagine what it can do now if part of it is here in Ireland.
Yeah. And how important to it, sort of, you can be it if you see it? How big of a factor is that? Because we've seen a massive influx of girls and boys, but mostly girls, into soccer in Britain following their hosting of the major event. We know the impact Katie Taylor has in terms of, being a role model for boxers. I mean, it's very hard to maybe quantify what impact it might have, but it's certainly hopefully going to inspire a new generation to, be the people that they get to see playing in their own country.
Yeah, listen, communication and all of those things are so much different now than it was 40 years ago. That's for sure. But the effect at that time that us qualifying for a major tournament had was incredible. Places in Ireland didn't play soccer, and suddenly now the kids were inspired to go and play and enjoy themselves. The benefit of young players now, take for example our own group of young players, Gavin Bazuna, Evan Ferguson, those guys, they'll all be in their prime. I was 29 years old when Jack, 26 years old when Jack took over. I had only 9 caps. I went on to get 80 caps, which is probably nothing compared to Shea Given and those guys, and even the young guys now. But that next period of my life was transformative, and it was unbelievable. And that affected, a lot of young people around our country. And the same effect hopefully will continue. We've been working very, very hard to grow participation. We've been working very hard to try to give people the opportunity to go on and represent their country or play professional. But we also make sure that our grassroots clubs are looked after, because we just need people playing the sport, playing any sport, but playing football is our game. So we want them to play that. And it sort of inspired me when I was young, I must admit, watching on TV, watching role models. Now we've got our own role models, and hopefully they will qualify, and it'll be all in Dublin, and it'll be fantastic.
Yeah, and you mentioned caps there. I mean, have we ever done a like-for-like analysis? Shea is amazing, don't get me wrong, but I'm not sure There was as many games in your time, albeit not that long ago, as there are now. But anyway, be that as it may, it's going to be great. It's going to be a great buzz. Are we going to be there? Because there's five host nations, effectively, and I think there's two places being withheld for those who don't qualify. I haven't really read as to how that might work for us. Do we presume that three of the nations will automatically qualify and that means that we will get our position there? Or there's no guarantees though, Paddy, is there?
There's not a full guarantee, but in saying that, the good thing is that England, all of us, England's obviously got the most venues and they're probably the bigger partner, but they certainly will have to, they've gone into the qualification process. All of us will go into that qualification process and hopefully we will be good enough to qualify in our own right. But let's say England, Scotland have gone through another unbelievable development in the last while. I look back to the year we missed out in 2020 for the games in Dublin, but Scotland had them. They had them in Hampden, and they've kicked on from that situation from an international perspective. So they're in a good position at the moment. Wales are, of course, we know that they're able to challenge. So whatever's left, we're in a better position now than we would have if we didn't get to host these nations this tournament, because there's these two qualification spots even if you don't qualify. So we're in a much better position. Yes, we don't know how it's going to pan out yet because UEFA have got to come up with detail around that, Greg, but we'll be in a good position, I think.
Finally, Paddy, what would you like to see, or what do you think is needed to sort of reinvigorate the national team? Because we're going through a bit of a lull at the moment, and you know, well, I'm not getting into speculation about the future of Mr. Kenny and what have you, but what's missing? What do you think is missing that, you know, that we're not seeing the type of performances that we see from similar countries like Wales and Scotland particularly?
Yeah, listen, you know, in my day, we had players playing with the top clubs. There's no question about that. The Liverpools, the Man Uniteds, Celtic, Tottenham, Arsenal, all of those clubs, and they were all playing in European competition at club level. And then the extension of that was that they were able to compete at international. Once we got over the first hurdle, and that was in the Euro 88, and we were able to compete. The younger players, the players now, are not with the big clubs, and that's a matter of fact. So we have to try to produce the players ourselves. That's not easy. Our underage international program is hugely crucial. The work that's going on within the grassroots leading into the League of Ireland academy level is hugely important. We have a new pathways plan that has gone through the final stages of its creation, and I'm kind of helping out a little bit and giving my thoughts and around that. But in the main, that's going to be hugely important for us going forward. Finance is important because the problem is we have got Brexit now. Brexit has caused us a real problem because our young players are not going away. And unfortunately, in the past, we had to rely on English clubs, Scottish clubs and that to finish the players off. Maybe we took our eye off the ball as far as League of Ireland clubs were concerned, but that's where we need to get to. So it takes money, it takes a plan, it takes a vision, and it takes hard work. And the young players will still have that opportunity. And then I actually think international football is so vital for them to play in tournaments and get success, because that's the catalyst for them then to be attracted to the bigger clubs and go into the Champions League, go into that level. And this we have a lot of good young players, but and listen, Evan Ferguson is an example of it. He's come through the system. He's 18 years old and he's playing with Brighton. He's scoring goals. He's in the Premier League. We need more of them. And it's not easy to come up with what probably the solution for it, but it's hard work and it's putting the right vision in place. And that's what we're doing, Greg. We're working very hard at it. And everybody has to come together and make sure that happens. Everybody's got a role to play. It's not just one group, the League of Ireland on their own. Grassroots have got a huge important part. That's where they all start. And it all has to be joined together by the hip. And that's the vision that we need to try to implement over the next 4, 5, 10 years.
Fascinating insights as always. Paddy, thank you so very much for your time. Have a lovely day. Paddy Bohner there, former Republic of Ireland goalkeeper. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, as you know, don't you? But I do like to remind you because it gives me a chance to think of what I'm doing next for the most part. Right. Ashley Morning, And Mark Humphreys getting married today in Rafal. All the best from Uncle Dennis. And they're going to get a nice dry day, I think, as well, which is good. Let me see if I mentioned everything that I want to mention. There is, we have a ton of comments, which is fantastic. But they're very, they're piling up here. So I'm going to make time for them, of course, as this morning wears on. We really appreciate you taking the time to take your phone out, lift the phone. That's all coming up shortly, but we do need to take a break. You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. It's great to have you all on board and keeping us really busy on the phone lines. 086 60 25,000, as you know. Caller wants to know who he should contact regarding traffic management in the mornings. The schools are saying that the road outside the school perimeters are not their responsibilities. They belong to the county council. I tried to call the RSA but cannot get through. The caller's concerned at the lack of control around the traffic and children running between traffic in the morning time and the potential accident it could cause with no one managing it. Okay. We're joined on the programme now by our next guest, who is Donal Kearney, Director of Sustainability Growth at... well, actually waiting for Donal to join us. He's going to be joining us very shortly. He is the Director of Sustainability Growth at Pragmatica. And he's going to be joining us very, very shortly. So whilst he does, I'll grab another comment here. In relation to the current conversation, this is as it relates to Micah there. What about homeowners who own and live in Donegal but mortgages through a bank in Northern Ireland? A bank is AIBNI in my case, who when I bought was offering mortgages to buy over the border. I lived in Derry at that stage, so it allowed me to borrow sterling and buy a house in Letterkenny. I don't know. It's a very specific inquiry there, and unfortunately I don't have an answer to it, but someone listening out there perhaps might. Right, okay. As I mentioned, I believe we can say hello now to Donal Kearney, Director of Sustainability Growth at Pragmatica. Good morning to you, Donal. Are you there?
Good morning, Greg. I hear you. I'm not sure if you hear me.
I hear you loud and clear. Right, okay. There's an event taking place on Thursday, which is actually tomorrow. It's at 9 a.m. at the TCS in Letterkenny. Sustainability for Business, Green Skills for Success. Break that down for us, Donal.
Sustainability, well, it's the big buzzword out there at the moment, isn't it, Greg? And what we're finding right now, nobody really knows where to begin, particularly from an SME point of view. So I'm hoping to shed a little bit of light on the macro and the micro viewpoint of sustainability and give people a little bit of guidance of what's coming down the road from a, you know, an EU perspective, from a legal perspective, and more importantly, from a business. How is this going to help businesses stay in business, win more business, and align with what's going on?
Yeah, so because a lot of people hear about sustainability and green things, right, and instantly mean, well, that's further costs. That's going to cost me. That means I'm going to have to spend more. That's going to put more pressure on the business. Is it a case of trying to see where the benefits are and maximizing those for your business, and at the same time then being able to have that moniker, which of course is becoming increasingly attractive to customers and clients?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing for people to recognize is, you know, business is a part, is part of everything we do. So we are going to create carbon. So first of all, it's discovering what you're using within your business and strategizing to reduce that. So by reducing your CO2 footprint and increasing hopefully your market share within your desired customer base should actually lead to a cutback on spending. So there is no great expense to begin. There's no great expense to understand where you're at. Education is key. Measurement is key. But I think burying your head in the sand and hoping it'll go away, that's the real cost. But we, you know, you hear the term ESG all the time. Frankly, a lot of people don't understand. Most of their business, all their business is either using environmental, social, and governance. It's tying it all together and pointing your business in a direction that's most beneficial.
And the reality is, you know, people can huff and puff, but it's clear where the direction of traffic is going. You know, there are targets, hard targets set there, and, you know, a deadline is going to emerge and get ever closer. It's very much, I would imagine, in businesses' interests to, you know, to be working at it now.
And we're seeing it. It's come in pretty strong within the tendering process at the moment, both in the private and the public sector. So in reality, it's been set up in such a way, Greg, that is quite clever. It's from the top down, even though it affects the big organizations at the very top, and they're going to have to begin the reporting standards in 2025. They also have to report down their supply chain, and that knock-on effect is going to be dramatic. And it'll knock from their next two to the next two to the next two. We're seeing the likes of Tesco, Aldi, Lidl, all putting companies under pressure to have their carbon footprint in line.
There are helps out there, not just information, but subsidies, supports, breaks.
Yeah, phenomenal. Just like even tomorrow, Brenda Hegarty is getting up from the local enterprise office. She's going to talk about the supports and that end. Enterprise Ireland, phenomenal. SEAI, unbelievable helps out there at the moment. It's educating the small businesses and the medium business what they can get, how they can get it, and how to map the next 5 years in line with the supports that are there.
Yeah, and people can get a sense of what the topics are going to be. We can't, or I can't do it justice with the amount of time that we have, but it is tomorrow. It's at the TCS in Letterkenny. Starts off at 9 a.m. With a good networking opportunity and a cup of tea and what have you. A great panel of speakers. An opportunity for question and answers as well later on in the morning, which I think is vital, because there will be a few fires lit under people, low carbon, hopefully, and you know, be able to sort of maybe get some clarity on some points as well.
Yeah, and that's what it is. Like, there's so much information out there. There's a danger of getting lost and creating some inaction. So I'm going to hang around for anybody that has more pertinent questions afterwards. You know, we're going to go all 20 minutes. We're going to go very high level on the stage, but there's a great panel out there. So any questions, now's the time to come to them.
Yeah, okay. And obviously, a lot of the time, it's registration is, you know, is desirable. It's required for this event. You need to register. Email marie@letterkennychamber.com. And Donald, there's no particular business here. I think this affects all businesses potentially. So it's not like where anyone can sort of self-exclude. If you're in business, this is something that you need to be keeping a strong eye on.
Yeah, I was just in a conversation before this, like, we're dealing from everything from pharmaceutical, property developers, facilities management, manufacturers, food. It's everybody. You know, there is no avoiding it. Educate yourself. That's the best tool I can recommend.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you very, very much indeed, Donald. I really appreciate it. Donald Kearney, Director of Sustainable Growth at Pragmatica. If you want to attend, email marie@letterkennychamber.com. Let me just double check that email address. Yes, Marie, M-A-R-I-E, @letterkennychamber.com. It's tomorrow morning from 9.